Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Thanksgiving weekend edition of Inside the Black Box here on Radio Sandy Springs. Radio Sandy Springs' weekly show on science and technology.
This week, it's how long can you wait before you actually throw out the turkey? That's one of the things we're going to discuss.
Is that the deal? Until it's just so riddled with bacteria?
Yeah.
Wow, I think.
But go ahead.
I did not mean to interrupt. You've thrown me right off my mark already.
Sorry,
this is much like you still have got what are the natural the sleeping effects of turkey? I forget what it is. Tryptophan.
Yeah.
There you
go.
So
I'm loaded up.
Amino acid tryptophan.
Yeah, I'm loaded up with.
All right. So given the fact that our guest sort of chimed in with that, we're going to introduce our guest right at the beginning. Mainly because I just love the way his name sounds. Dr. Facundo Fernandez. Sounds like, hello, my name is Antonio Banderas. Just sounds so good. Who received his...
He's got a hot-looking girlfriend, so I think it works.
Oh, and how do you know? From Beer Club?
Beer Club.
Okay, this is a sad thing when you got three Georgia Tech faculty sitting around saying, well, how do we learn things about science and technology at Georgia Tech? Beer Club. So, Dr. Fernandez received his bachelor's and PhD degrees in chemistry from Buenos Aires University in Argentina. After completing postdoctoral studies at both Stanford and the University of Arizona, he joined the faculty in the School of Chemistry and Biochemistry at the Georgia Institute of Technology. And Professor Fernandez's research focuses on studying methods for screening the quality of drugs used in the treatment of tropical diseases using spectroscopy, and we're going to define that. He doesn't know this yet. We've got to define all these big, long-haired words. To identify pathogens for homeland security and diagnostic applications. And he also works on finding counterfeit drugs. So, Facundo, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
All right. So, before we get into the whole thing of counterfeit drugs, we need to recap last week's show.
Yes, in which case, Pete's son was working on his erectile dysfunction merit badge.
Do they have that now? The Scouts are very progressive.
You know, they probably do. I'm almost certain the Girl Scouts have that one.
Okay, there comes the lawsuit right now from the Girl Scouts of America. So last week, at least they're listening. We sort of did an ad hoc show on what the heck was
herbal.
It? I wouldn't know anything about these things, by the way.
Yeah.
On male enhancement products, and basically tried to remind our listeners that the things you should look for in a clinical study are things like double-blind studies, studies with positive and negative controls, and what those things mean.
The Catholic Church said that for years. You'll go blind or double-blind.
That's the double-blind study right there. I was an altar boy, too.
I really don't want to hear
no repressed memories
personal,
so far, so I'm okay. But
there was a priest. It was a weekend.
You're killing me, man.
Sorry.
Okay. So, but those are the sorts of things you should certainly look for. And in general, our conclusion with regard to what was it? It's on the website. We just picked on one of these last night. Extends, I believe, was the name of it.
Go figure how they got that.
It has a lot of herbal products in it that are vasodilators.
Right.
And there is a connection between vasodilation and, enhanced...
Blood flow is a good thing.
But not a permanent growth. So you're not going to see much of a permanent growth. But, that certainly can't hurt. So maybe that's why people don't return it all the time.
Yeah, and there was this week, as if on cue, there was a guy that he had had the... penis enlargement surgery, was not happy with it, and sent a
Is this
bomb.
A real story?
No, it wasn't.
This come to you in a dream again.
Okay, I've been drinking, and it was actually, he sent a bomb to his doctor because apparently he wasn't satisfied with the surgery.
Wow. So it's like Lorena Bobbitt in reverse.
Yes. Right.
How unfortunate.
Right.
We're not going to apologize for last week's show because I think we're willing to do almost anything short
we're
of
reaching
you know,
out to the community.
Resorting to frontal nudity here in the studio to reach out to people and engage them on science and technology. And to that end, I was talking with a friend of mine who's a video producer about trying to do some sort of television project, and he suggested going with the Discovery Channel, because they did some of the best science shows on TV. And, in fact, the one he quoted was, he said, you should do a science show that's engaging like the Mythbusters. And this was a year or two ago, and it never occurred to me that the Mythbusters was a science show. But, in fact, John Schwartz's article from the Science Times this Tuesday in the New York Times, November 21st, describes it as the best science show on television. So this is Jamie Heineman and his colleague Adam Savage are the hosts of Mythbusters on the Discovery Channel. It may be the best science program on television in no small part because it does not purport to be a science program at all. What Mythbusters is best known for, to paraphrase Mr. Heineman, is blowing stuff up and banging stuff together and setting stuff on fire and so on and so on. And the two men admit they do it for the fun and the ratings, of course, but in a subtle and goofily, I didn't even know goofily was a word, goofily educational way, they commit mayhem for science's sake. And in fact, people love this show, right? So So they learn a little bit about science as a, you're laughing at my drooping microphone here.
Yeah, it gets back
to the... Is
this
a callback to
the extends thing. Yeah, he's got a very droopy
okay,
microphone this
morning.
This is
where the FCC begins to monitor us now.
What?
So, gentlemen, let me put it to you. Is that the key? We need to have fun stuff where we blow... Should we be blowing more things up on this show?
Well, I think probably not. But I think that in general, you know, you could look at the Mythbusters. It's practical. It's pragmatic. It's not billions and billions of years ago. I mean, it's stuff that, you know, people saw this. Gee, how did this work? I learned how this worked.
Right.
Interesting. Or people say this is what this does and it doesn't do it. I think we need more pragmatic approaches in science and in engineering. Frankly, pedagogy since World War II has...
And pedagogy, the method by which you teach something.
Just assumes that everybody, you know, had Heath kits and built radios growing up. And they're still assuming that when they... No, they don't. You know, and so we're the practical side is what's missing from a lot of the tutelage.
Yeah, and the tutelage. You just tried to get that in because it sounds funky.
I just wanted to see you sweating to find it. That's
all. So, and it went on to mention that the particular show...
But I won't use the word titillating, I promise.
Okay, that they showcased was why the Hindenburg exploded. Mm-hmm. And they were testing a theory that maybe it was this aluminum powder, epoxy coating that was quite flammable that actually led to it. Their conclusion was, no, the hydrogen played a big role in this thing, which I would suspect.
Yeah.
But so we have a chemist, but he's pharmaceutical. They claim that the mixture that they coated the Hindenburg with was similar to thermite. And everybody likes doing the thermite. Did you ever do the thermite reaction?
No, I never.
What is thermite? Okay.
So it's this. They say it's an explosive, but my understanding is that thermite is something that just burns at an unbelievably high rate. You can use it to fuse metal rails together. That's what they actually used it for.
Aluminum powder. You know?
Yes, it's aluminum powder with a few additives.
Very
to get it going.
Exothermic.
Yeah, and things like aluminum and magnesium, when they're finely in a fine powder, will burn unbelievably hot. That's exactly it. Extremely exciting.
Because they rapidly oxidize.
It's probably
right. And a chunk of it is. It's hard to burn a chunk of magnesium or aluminum. You can light a strip of magnesium, but it's very, very difficult.
But it needs to be in nanoparticles, microparticles.
A lot of surface area.
Yeah. So, and their conclusion was, you know, that it was the hydrogen that also contributed, although the one without the hydrogen burned quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to blow stuff up. And this is not unique, right, because we were talking before the show with our chemist friend here that CSI... and what was the story with CSI? You were mentioning they went to great lengths for the authenticity.
Yeah, they. I was surprised. You know, I use the CSI story for my classes a lot, and a company I work with was telling me that they actually developed a model of a real instrument for their show, very, very detailed. So they really try hard to show people what people do in their labs. You know, I was very impressed.
Right, and many people have told me that there's a tremendous jump in the increase in applied chemistry because of CSI.
Right.
This in contrast to one of my favorite movies, if you've seen this with your kids, Snow Day with Chevy Chase. So my field is molecular modeling, so I noticed I was probably the only geek on the planet that noticed this. At the beginning, they have a little animation of, you know, individual water molecules coming together, crystallizing, forming ice crystals and snowflakes and dropping down to the earth. If you look at the model of water, which should look like a sphere with two little spheres sticking out
at
about 109-something degrees, it's really got four blobs sticking out of it, so it's really methane. So apparently in Snow Day, snow comes from methane.
Right, yeah.
I think we have to take a break now. Okay, is he signaling us?
He is signaling us.
All right, so enough of that. We'll be back talking about counterfeit drugs after the break. You're listening to Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs. All right, welcome back to Inside the Black Box. And today we'll be talking about counterfeit drugs. And if you've got an interesting counterfeit drug story or you're concerned about this thing, by all means, give us a call this morning at 404-943-1620. Or if you're outside the Sandy Springs or Atlanta area, toll free at 866-356-0789. And, of course, if you're listening to us streaming on www.radiosandysprings.com, both those numbers are listed there as well.
And keep in mind, this is asking questions about counterfeit drugs, not purchasing them.
Oh, okay. That's
yeah, I just wanted to clarify that.
That's very good. So let's turn to
not an infomercial here,
Dr. Fernandez, and talk about basically what are counterfeit drugs. I mean, assuming we're not talking about oregano, in a baggie or something like that. We're talking about legitimate pharmaceuticals.
Yeah. Well, the main definition of a counterfeit drug is a drug that tries to deceive the public, the customer. So anything that goes into that definition, it could be fake packaging, real packaging with fake content, and lower amounts of the expected ingredients, and so on, so on, so on. So different countries actually have different definitions of fake drugs. So there's not a single definition, but
is this more that they just have circumvented the normal control process? So it may be an actual, like if you're think you're getting Lipitor, it may be Lipitor Light or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean,
it's heroin pretending. To
no,
be
no,
Lipitor
no, no, no.
Like
it's a huge range of different levels of counterfeiting. Could be very, very sophisticated, or could be just simply that the drug doesn't contain the active ingredient at all. So you depending on the country, you find all different types of drugs that could be fake. But the main central definition is that it basically tries to deceive the customer.
Okay.
So it pretends to be something that it's not.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the real danger is that you have no idea. I mean, unlike a counterfeit piece of software or DVD, you know what you're getting. And either it's Arnold Schwarzenegger and True Lies or it's not. And, if it's a little grainy, you still, got a reasonable product. Here, if it's something like, a cholesterol drug, a malarial drug, you're completely hosed. So where are these problems the worst?
Well, in two places. First of all, in developing countries, because the controls are fairly poor, and governments don't have the infrastructure to basically support controlling all these drugs being sold and bought. And the second place, I would say, probably online. Internet pharmacies are a major source of counterfeit and substandard drugs. So both types of low-quality drugs.
So when you say substandard, what do you mean? How is that different
than
counterfeit drug?
Substandard is basically a drug that it's a low-quality drug, and it contains the expected active ingredient, but it's not in the amount that it should be there. The packaging, it's probably real, but it's not been stored or not been prepared in the right conditions. So it's important to differentiate, because a substandard drug is not a drug that people are trying to deceive the public, but it's still a low-quality drug.
No, so this sounds like it has to be almost a company that's trying to do this, right?
Absolutely. I mean, in our experience, all the fake drugs that we have found are found in very large scale. I mean, not few numbers. We're talking about hundreds
of
thousands of pills.
So this isn't somebody pulling a prank?
No, absolutely not. It's not a little garage operation. These are people that are trying to make serious money out of this.
And do they tend to be subsidiaries of the big drug companies?
Well, sometimes you wonder. I mean, where these people get the means to prepare these drugs? And pharmaceutical companies also have their own anti-counterfeiting operations where they try to bust the people that try to get their drugs on the market in a fake way. But it's hard to tell. There's a point where you stop doing research and you really do law enforcement, and then you have to turn this into the police. Yeah.
Right. Well, I have a cousin that's a pharmaceutical rep for Pfizer, and he said it's not uncommon to have whole blocks of drugs or pharmaceuticals enter the market in the U.S. and they're not. He didn't use the word counterfeit,
but they're not
what they should be. They don't have the effect that they've somehow circumvented the normal.
No, that's absolutely true. And if you do a search on the web on drug counterfeit drugs or fake drugs, you will see many cases the drugs that are being seized in customs. Mm-hmm. There was one this year on fake Tamiflu, for example. And if you look for Tamiflu, You know, the one that is used for influenza.
It's an antiviral influenza drug.
Yeah, and there was some, you know, large shipment, you know, caught by customs, and there are many websites offering Tamiflu. But it's only manufactured in a few places, so, you know, clearly that tells you that it's not possible. Yeah.
So is there a difference in the occurrence of counterfeit drugs among, you know, patented name brand drugs versus something that's already gone generic? Are the generics more susceptible to this stuff?
That's a very interesting question. Actually, you know, what people normally say is that the drugs that are in high danger of being counterfeited are the ones that are expensive and are in really high demand. But that's not really so much true. Any drug that is actually in high demand is going to be counterfeited. Mm-hmm. Because if you can sell millions of tablets, then you can make a profit. Right. So even very cheap, you know, drugs like acetaminophen can be counterfeited. So it's much more common than we think.
But when I think of acetaminophen, just think about the economics of it. I mean, as a chemical engineer, buy my my vitamins at Walmart in sort of the generic version, this sort of stuff. And maybe I should be worried about counterfeit drugs because, you know, all the organic places from general nutrition centers said, well, they have to come from rose hips, otherwise your ascorbic acid isn't right. But I know ascorbic acid is a very simple compound, and, you know, that's pretty easy to synthesize by the ton and just mix it with a binder. But it just seems that acetaminophen is so cheap that they wouldn't...
Yeah, I mean, but you still find... I mean, cheap is a relative scale. I mean, depends on who you're talking about. It's probably cheap for all of us here, but for a rural country, a person working in the field that is making probably $2 a month, it may not be so cheap. So in relative terms, it may be expensive. Any sort of medicine could be expensive. So that's why these are still counterfeited. And it's always cheaper to use, you know, chalk than acetaminophen.
Right. Just the binder powder from the...
Yeah. Some very, very simple mixture. Right. Yeah.
So my next question then is, if you think about how to make a pill, well, you have these presses, and you don't need the industrial size one that churns out a million pills in a day.
Actually, why don't you go through that like people don't know how to make pills? Well, so describe what the process is.
Well, so they simply take some sort of binder, right? And what are you familiar with what most of the binders are?
Normally a mixture, of binders, excipients, glidants, and so on. So, you can have fairly sophisticated excipient mixtures. Okay. And then these are pressed together with the active ingredient or active ingredients.
So what is an excipient mixture? What do you mean by that?
It's the vehicle of the drug. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the doses is so small that you wouldn't be able to take it, you know, just by taking it by hand into your mouth. So you need a larger pill.
Right.
And that's the reason why you need to make a larger pill with excipients. And the excipients are just the simple chemicals used to carry your active drug. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So these things that will help solubilize
or actually prevent very fast dissolution.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
we've got to go to a commercial break. Let's pick this up because I think part of the process would be good for people to hear about is the fact that you take the pill, but you've got this, you know, this acid pit called your stomach, and you want it to get to the bloodstream. So how do you actually, what chemical modifications happen by then?
Right.
But you're listening to Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 AM, and we'll see you after the break.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, where we're talking with Dr. Facundo Fernandez about counterfeit drugs. So before the break, we were chatting about what sort of things go into a typical pill. So what are those typical components, those binders you were mentioning?
The outside of the pill, so that, you know, one pill sort of tastes like another.
Well, that's the coating. The coating may be very different, but the binder is literally this powder.
Yeah, what keeps stuff together,
Which you say
you have lactose, you have...
sugars.
Yeah, right? Sugars, you have calcium carbonate, you have...
Chalk.
Cellulose,
Wood.
Uh-huh. Basically, very, very common compounds that you can press together with the active ingredient.
Right.
Yes, and you press them at a very high pressure, actually, a few tons. Yeah.
And then part of that is when it gets to the stomach, so if you just had the pure drug, what would happen in the stomach?
Well, it will dissolve in your bloodstream very, very quickly. You know, it will just migrate into your blood, and you will get a huge dose over time.
So it wouldn't necessarily break down the chemical?
It could actually break down the chemical, depending on how sensitive it is.
It depends on the chemical,
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Wow. So then
so it's control. So to first order, it controls the release of the drug.
Okay. Yeah.
And then they can get more sophisticated, right? So, for example, all these pills that say do not crush, literally sort of have a homogeneous, a uniform distribution of the drug inside this matrix that dissolves quite slowly. It'll make it through your stomach and dissolve in your large intestine. But if you crush it, like OxyContin is often done by OxyContin addicts, you'll get a quick surge.
Yeah, you get a rush. And you also have multi-layer tablets where you have different layers with different release times. Yeah.
Right.
So exactly. Like sleeping aids, for example, they have a very quick release on one layer, so they will put you to sleep and then very slow release later.
And that's there's a new drug that actually advertises that on TV.
Right.
Sounds like something good for me. I need to look into that. But the what is it? So how do you find if something is counterfeit?
There are basically two layers of you know, investigation. The first way of doing it is looking at the packaging. And sometimes the packaging will just tell you that it's fake because it can even have some spelling errors on the packaging. We've seen that, and that's an easy one, right?
But then Viagra.
But you're right. If you're in Central Africa and you don't read English all that well, then and you get it, you don't know.
Exactly. Right? I mean, so it's really targeted to a public that it's not very educated. So then you see, for example, companies are trying to use holograms to authenticate their product, but then counterfeited, they try to come up with holograms too. So we have a list of about 15 different types of holograms, of fake holograms right now.
Wow.
For these particular drugs that we're investigating. And they become very sophisticated to the point that where you really cannot tell which one is the real one or which one is not.
Right.
And then when you pass that stage of looking at the packaging, you can do some simple chemical tests to see if you can produce color based on a chemical reaction.
Right. And then for the
active ingredient, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that usually works very well, and it's used by law enforcement, by medical researchers and so on. But what those tests don't tell you is that, well, if the drug is fake, does it contain anything else?
Right.
And you would expect that it doesn't. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I believed all my life, okay, if it's a fake drug, why would we have anything else besides the excipients and the binders and so on?
Mm-hmm.
But they actually do contain, in most cases, other drugs, like expired drugs, low amounts of... we found antibiotics, acetaminophen, first-generation anti-malarials, a huge array of different chemicals. And we believe that they're probably just there because they want to induce some sort of placebo effect on the customer. So if you take a pill that's only chalk, you're not going to feel any effects.
Right.
But if you take a pill that contains a large doses of acetaminophen, you're going to feel better if you have fever. Of course, it's not going to treat your real disease, but... field chemical tests won't tell you is what's really in the drug.
Right.
So that's what we do at Georgia Tech. We take those drugs that did not pass the test, and we look at them in more detail.
And the field test, basically, you have some sort of chemical reaction that induces a color change in the visible region. What are these things? Are these typically things that will bind with the drug somehow?
One of the things that you can do is you can make a colorimetric test where, you can form a decomposition product of your drug, and that decomposition product will absorb radiation and change color.
Okay, so you put an enzyme or some sort of strong
acid
or something.
Like a strong base or strong acid that will change the chemicals so it absorbs
break
color.
It into parts that will absorb a color.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the other way is just, a second chemical that will bind to your drug and will produce color.
Right, because I think most people, when they do these color tests, whether it's litmus paper or the sugar test for diabetics, the color changes and it's magic. And it's really just, either a decomposition or something that binds and it changes
that's
absorption
chemistry.
Of light.
Basic
absolutely.
Chemistry. Yeah.
Right. So if it fails this field test, which looks to see if there's some level of the compound in there, it can't always tell exactly what the level is, though, right?
No, it's basically binary. It's a yes or no response.
Right.
So you get, a yes or a no, but if it's a no, it means it's below, let's say, 20 milligrams per tablet.
Right.
But you may still have 15 milligrams per tablet or may have zero.
Right.
And, the consequences of having these two levels are very different. One of the problems with fake drugs is that they can create resistance to the disease. So, if you have low amounts of the active ingredient, you can generate resistance to this active ingredient in bacteria, in viruses, in parasites, and so on.
So it's just enough to get it to hang out and develop a resistance, but it can't kill it all.
Exactly.
It's a low dosage.
So you will select a pool of resistant, let's say, bacteria or resistant parasites that will survive these low amounts of drugs. And that's exactly what you don't want to do to preserve your, high-quality drug that is, your last resource antibiotic, for example.
Right.
Yeah. So it's you know, it's a much more complicated problem than it seems. It's not simply just the, you know, the fact that we try to buy something and it's not what we wanted to, and you know, we don't get the effect. It can have some long term you know, consequences.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So in it, just to get the scale, so let's take a third world country where there's a problem. What percentage of the drugs are counterfeit? I know that's sort of too wide open.
We're asking
question.
For an estimate here. I realize yeah, nobody probably knows the exact answer.
It's exactly, yeah. I mean, it's nobody really knows for sure, but you know, in our experiments, we've seen that sometimes the batches that we receive, up to 70%, 80% were fake.
Wow.
In this, I'm talking about anti-malarial drugs, which are the ones that we're specifically looking at. So the estimates normally say that in developing countries, it's between 30 and 40%. So the chances of going to the pharmacy and getting a fake drug are pretty high.
Going to a pharmacy and getting wow.
Yeah, these are pharmacies.
Now,
yeah.
You had mentioned to us before the show that one of the motivating factors for this is that you can buy them more cheaply. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always just because of greed. I mean, these are criminal operations. Mm-hmm. People are just trying to make money out of this. And the drugs that are mostly counterfeited are the ones that are very expensive and in very high demand. Mm-hmm. So we do see that very often. You know, you have very expensive anti-malarial drugs, they're counterfeited. And so in the U.S., same thing. Expensive drugs are the ones that are counterfeited.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's very common. It's extremely common.
Okay. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, one of your areas of research, these anti... Do we need to take a break. My watch is slow. All right, well, we'll talk about these anti-malarial drugs after the break. You're listening to Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 AM and RadioSandySprings.com. Back to Inside the Black Box, where we're talking with Dr. Facundo Fernandez about counterfeit drugs and... Now, malarial drugs. So malarial drugs are the target of a lot of counterfeiting.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very large. Very large operation.
Because they're quite expensive.
Yeah, I mean, there are many anti-malarial drugs. You know, malaria has been, you know, a huge disease for over a century now. But there are several generations. And malaria parasites actually develop resistance to different drugs over the time. So... you know, scientists try to come up with newer drugs that are more effective and efficient against the new generation of, you know, parasites. And the drugs that we are investigating with some collaborators from the CDC and collaborators from the Wellcome Trust in Southeast Asia are the last or latest generation anti-malarial drugs, which are based on a natural product called artemisinin.
Mm-hmm.
And I was totally surprised. I have to, you know, admit that I didn't know that these were counterfeited. And the counterfeiting is in very, very large scale. We recently found a single organization in Southeast Asia that purchased something like 100,000 fake tablets without knowing. They just purchased them from, you know, from the market, and they were very worried to find out that they were all fakes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this year, we, for the first time, we documented the first case of a death by anti-malarial drugs that were fake.
Was it a death due to malaria? Because
this was a patient in the Thai-Burma border, so a very remote area, and this patient came to a small, you know, medical center in the area with complicated malaria. And, of course, he was administered the drugs that they thought they were real, and the patient didn't make any progress the first day, the second day. So they took him to the regional hospital, and he basically died when he arrived to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And then they took the drugs, and they checked them, and I actually checked them in my lab, and they we realized that they were fake.
Right.
So,
and the way that you check these drugs, we mentioned in your bio, via spectroscopy. What sort of spectroscopy
do you do? Well, let me throw in one thing, but this is really more malicious than the cocaine drug trade.
Yeah.
I mean, at least there, you know, you've made the rather bad decision to be a coke addict, and
right.
They're selling you coke, and maybe there's some other...
Yeah, and you're losing out on the recreational effect, not a life and death thing.
Right, but this is, you know, somebody thinks they're getting something they really need to save their life, and they're just going to die because they don't get it. I mean, it's
absolutely
really more malicious than...
Mm-hmm.
It's more malicious than,
and
you know,
it,
just,
you know,
Pete not being able to get good Viagra, you know?
Right.
It just goes beyond that, you know?
You know, it really affects... It really affects all of us. You know, we have troops, you know, in foreign countries where there is malaria. We have scientists in foreign countries where there is malaria. We have, you know, workers. So this really, it's not only for the local people. I think it's a problem that it's really starting to touch all of us. One of the things that could be done against counterfeit drugs is basically to penalize counterfeit drugs in the same way that illegal drugs are penalized. You know, so basically now if you are carrying any sort of illegal drug, you go to jail. Well, if you're carrying a counterfeit drug, the penalties are not so tough. But if you made them this tough, then people will think twice about doing it.
So are the penalties similar to carrying counterfeit CDs and DVDs?
It's probably something like that. I'm not sure, but it's not the same. Yeah.
Sort of the trademark infringement, a commerce type penalty. Wow, that's amazing. And you mentioned before the show that in addition to resistance to these malarial drugs, one of the problems is because it's a parasite, if you're taking the drugs and you believe you've got this parasite under control, then when a mosquito bites you, the mosquito doesn't get the parasite and carry it on.
Exactly.
But in fact, if you are still carrying the parasite, you are spreading it to other
individuals. Spread the disease.
Individuals.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, no, and you were asking me basically how do we detect these drugs in the lab.
Right.
And, you know, you mentioned the word spectroscopy. The tool that we use is called mass spectrometry. It's basically an instrumental tool that we use in the lab and that will give us the molecular weight of the drug that we are looking at. And, you know, the molecular weight is basically one part of the signature of this drug. Mm-hmm. It will tell you, it will give you a very good idea of what's in there.
Right.
And then you can actually fragment this molecule.
Right.
You can select this molecule and you break it into pieces. And
so
then
back up a little bit.
Yeah, mass spectrometry.
Or a spectrum is, think of visible light. You know, you've got from blue to red and all these little colors in between. This is spreading or diagnosing breaking down a...
Right.
A substance in this case into how many different masses of things is there. So that's what spectrum, think of it spreading out into color. You can sort of see how it's combined to make some aggregate.
And the reason why we still call it a spectrum, although it's not very correct, is because when people started learning about this technique, mass spectrometry, they thought they were looking at photons and light.
Right.
And they actually were looking at ions.
Right. But from the fragments of the molecule.
Yeah, so all their knowledge was coming from doing, you know, optical or light spectroscopy.
Right.
That's why we still
So when
that
we
way.
Say spectroscopy, we mean exactly what Bill's talking about, that you can look in the visible region, you can look in the ultraviolet, you can look in the infrared to see what that particular molecule absorbs or gives off under certain conditions. For example, you can burn it in a flame and it will give off certain, you know, wavelengths of light. And in mass spectrometry, they literally blow it apart.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, very, very hard.
Now, how do they blow it apart?
We have many, many nice tools to destroy molecules and, you know, look at the pieces. The easiest way is with a beam of electrons.
Okay.
We can take a highly energetic beam of electrons and break it into pieces.
Right.
But we can also use a laser, or we can also shoot the molecule at a very, very high speed into a chamber that has gas. Mm-hmm. And so for the molecule, it's like hitting a wall.
Right.
Basically.
Right.
So any way that you can put energy into a molecule, it works. And so it's like if you want to break any solid object, you know, just you need to add energy and all the bonds will break.
And then as it goes through, you look and see how it deflects.
Exactly. Now,
is it deflecting in a magnetic field typically?
It could be a magnetic field. It could be an electrical
field
or both.
Right. And that'll be a function of what its charge is
exactly.
and what its mass is.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So depending on the charge and the mass, you will get your different pieces falling in different places of your detector.
So do you do standard mass spectrometry or any of the weird ones? Like
we do very weird ones.
Okay.
Yeah. We normally, if you come to our lab, nothing is, it's all disassembled.
Science.
It's all disassembled, all the instruments. And, you know, the manufacturer doesn't know, but we disassemble all the instruments and we put them together before they come to the lab.
Okay.
But we use lasers, we use... Okay.
So lots of ways that you can do this.
Oh, yeah, and we're always trying to research into new ways of doing this.
So you get not only the molecular weight of the individual molecule, but all the fragments it would break into. And if it's a different molecule, it breaks into different fragments.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And then you can go into a database, and the database will, you know, basically tell you what's in there.
Okay, excellent. Well, I mean, we're finding now that with some of these techniques, these matrix techniques, you can get polymers, which is where I work, and literally see each individual oligomer of these things. It's quite sophisticated now. So
it's very sophisticated.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So that's how this stuff is investigated.
Yeah.
And we need to take a break right now. But when we come back, we can finish this up and maybe talk about the biggest, purveyor of these counterfeit drugs, which are online pharmacies as well. So we'll be back talking about counterfeit drugs. You're listening to Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 AM and RadioSandySprings.com. Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, where we're talking about counterfeit drugs. So, Dr. Fernandez, is there anything we need to say more about this spectroscopy?
pretty much done. I mean, it's okay. It's a very powerful tool, but that's what it is. It's just a tool, and for us, from the scientific point of view, we really want to improve it and find new ways of analyzing counterfeit drugs with spectrometry.
So for example, if you the way that you break the molecule apart has an impact on what you see. So you probably look for ways to break the molecule that are going to differentiate between similar molecules.
Absolutely. That's a very active field of research. Let's say that you imagine a molecule that has one bond that is very, very weak. Mm-hmm. That bond is always going to fall apart. And then you're always going to see only two pieces of this molecule. But that doesn't give you too much information. You really want to break all the molecule randomly.
Right.
So looking into ways of doing that, it's a very active area of research.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's very useful. Yeah.
All right, so we mentioned one of the biggest sources of counterfeit drugs is the Internet. So you had an interesting story about buying something relevant to our last week's show on male enhancement products. I believe it was Viagra over the Internet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, last year we had a high school teacher in our lab, and she wanted to do some research, and she wanted to do work on, you know, forensics of counterfeit drugs. So we decided to do something, you know, a little bit out of the box. So we went online and we looked for pharmacies that were selling something that looked like Viagra. And so we ordered online. So we didn't have to do much. We just plugged in a credit card number, my credit card number actually, and we had to, you know, check a few check boxes saying that we were okay with taking this medicine. Mm-hmm. And in 5 days, I got the tablets and my home address. Mm-hmm. So. And then,
and my first question is, what did your wife think when they arrived?
Well,
or what did you? Is are you married?
No, my girlfriend.
Okay, what did your girlfriend think when she discovered this?
He's expecting a big weekend, apparently.
She had this funny face. I was like, why are we? You know, and there's also important that we have a big age difference. So you know, I'm older than she is. So she thought that it was actually real. I was getting the Viagra for us. And it was a long explanation, you know, filled with scientific terms, and I don't think she bought it. But you know, I was like, I'm really just, you know, trying to see if these are fake or not.
So I'm going to remember this if they ever come to my house, honey. It's for an experiment at work.
Yes.
Remember that, Bill.
Yeah, go put the lingerie on. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I could not resist.
Yeah.
Okay.
We took them to the lab, and we did a lot of work on. And actually, these ones were actually real. And they did contain the expected active ingredient.
Okay.
I mean, but they were not Viagra because they were not sold by the company.
Right.
But they still, so this could be generics or could be very good, you know, fakes because they were still pretending to be Viagra, but they were not.
Mm-hmm.
What we didn't know is the doses. I mean, if it was the right amount or the wrong amount in the tablets, and that we couldn't check because we didn't get the standard chemical on time to check for this.
Right.
But the scary thing of this is that basically in 5 minutes I was able to get Viagra at home, fake Viagra at home, and they didn't ask if I had any heart conditions or any sort of problem. So that's the scary part. We have to be very careful. Buying online, sometimes you try to save money or try to save time, but you're never sure if you're getting the right stuff.
I would think that would be the case where if they have too much of the wrong stuff and it is cardiovascular related, somebody with heart trouble could really have some serious problems.
Because that is the interaction, right? With any drugs that regulate heartbeats, there's a problem with it.
Well, I think didn't that start off as it was, they were doing, maybe apocryphal, but that they were doing some clinical trials on heart medication and these guys in their 60s kept coming back after the thing was over with one free refill.
All right, now, you weren't part of that study, were you?
Not as far as we know.
Okay, right. We're not going to admit that
No.
But a lot of those things are sort of accidental. I'm trying to think. Some of the hair-growing products, I think minoxidil was a drug to regulate your heartbeat, and then they found it, you know, they got hair, and when they applied it topically, they got even more. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, the medicine for Parkinson's, right? L-Dopa, I think it was found that way, too. I
mean,
just by chance. So many drugs are found by chance.
Right.
Right. Like in different doses, they have different effects that they didn't expect. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a huge amount of research and resources put into, you know, developing new drugs.
So had this particular Viagra product, had it in the appropriate concentration, then, in fact, it really that would have been a commerce issue. That would have been violating the patent that, let's see, who is that? Is that a Merck drug? Who makes
I
that
think
one?
Pfizer?
Yeah. Right, so they would have been, you know, infringing on their patent and this sort of thing.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you should see how the way these tablets came packaged. You know, they arrived to my home address in an envelope, in a plastic bag. Just, you know, they came from, you know, the web address on this pharmacy was from Mexico. And I mean, there's no sense of being a legal source of any sort of drug. Right. So if you're going to buy online, you have to be careful that the online pharmacy is certified. Mm-hmm. There are some associations that certify online pharmacies.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's not that it's nothing that you shouldn't do, but, you know, you got to be careful.
And so we should do some
people,
research.
People on a fixed budget, people that are retired, that are trying to cut costs, medical costs, they may end up not getting...
And sometimes, you know, it's what we were discussing at the beginning. It's actually how the drug dissolves. It's not even what the drug contains, what the tablet mm-hmm. contains. So it may not dissolve the same way. So it's something to watch out for, yeah.
So you may suddenly get a quick boost rather than mm-hmm. what you're looking for. Because now the new drugs, they advertise, they work over several hours. So you've got a time window mm-hmm. there, which is much better.
For 6 hours instead yeah. of 4 hours or...
Wow. So, but I mean, it must be much worse, though, if it's not an issue of Cialis or Viagra counterfeits. If it is heart medication, angina medication, you know, things like that. I mean, does that occur as well? I mean,
I really don't have any statistics on real studies, and that's one of the things that you really can't find very large studies done online on mm-hmm. things that you can buy online. So it's all mm-hmm. hearsay, and it's what we believe that it's true. But, you know, the recent recommendations by the WHO, the World Health Organization, they were basically saying that about 50% of the drugs that you buy online overall could be fake. So that's a very scary number.
Right, and short of taking it down to your lab or into another analytical lab, and I know when you farm these out, it's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars to get these just one thing tested. The average person does not have the ability to do this.
No, absolutely. I mean, we have a very, very strong government, you know, agencies that basically take care of these. We have the FDA, we have the, mm-hmm. the you know, parts of the CDC that work on this, and they do a very good job, but it's a problem that is in such a huge scale that right. I think that we all really have to be aware of. I mean, you can't beat, you know, like the awareness of the single customer. If you're buying something that is new for you, keep an eye on what you're buying and, mm-hmm. and make sure that you're feeling right. And if you have any questions, just talk to your doctor. I mean, mm-hmm. there's no, you know.
Well, it also brings to my, you know, if you go back, you know, to, well, we go to McKinney's Apothecary in Decatur, and I know the guy. I know mm-hmm. the pharmacist, you know. So whereas if you go to CVS, mm-hmm. you know, there's an automaton behind the counter that's going to tell you it's 20 minutes to fill it and then 20 minutes and 20 minutes. Right. But, I mean, knowing at least somebody along the food chain.
Yeah, if you have a face.
Really
you know?
Helps. If you have a face, it yeah. really helps right. out.
I mean, absolutely.
You know? Not that you still don't.
Right,
it's not going to happen, but he's got to get fooled. That person, yeah. you know, woman or whatever, has to get fooled as well as everybody else. But you're ordering online, like you said. That sounds pretty scary. You get some pills in a Ziploc bag, you know.
It is, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, any pills in a Ziploc bag are to be avoided.
Yes.
All right, so we'll be back after a quick break and wrap up with Professor Facundo Fernandez from Chemistry and Biochemistry at Georgia Tech. You're listening to Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs. Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, where we're talking about counterfeit drugs. And we were talking before about the fact that, you know, this seems to be a real big problem online. But is it safe to say, I mean, so what's our conclusion on this? Should we just avoid online pharmacies?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would just say that, you know, if you go to an online pharmacy, make sure it's a certified pharmacy.
Okay.
And that it follows the, you know, there are associations that certify online pharmacies.
Okay.
And in that sense, at least you know there's a certain degree of quality in the product that you're buying.
Okay.
But still keep an eye, you know, if you're not feeling well or you don't feel the expected effects on the pills that you're taking, then, you know, talk to your doctor. There's no, you know, way out of that.
Well, I think this is one of those things, too, where, you know, if you're buying a, you know, knockoff Rolex watch, you know, and it still keeps time, well, you've still got a watch.
Right, right.
But in this
and
case,
for all people
you know
it is a Rolex.
Right. And in this case, though, it's, you know, you can't see what it's going to do. Mm-hmm. You can't just look at it and go, okay, well, yeah, maybe a knockoff, but, you know, it does the same thing. This could be very, very hazardous to your health.
Right. And we'll look into that. We'll see if we can't find some of these certification agencies and actually post them on the website under this particular show. But say, for example, I do find something that doesn't seem to work, one of my standard medications for something that I would recognize the symptoms reappearing, whether it's ulcers or angina or whatever, and I go to my doctor and it appears I am having a reoccurrence of symptoms. Can I go to the FDA and CDC and report
this? Absolutely. You can report this.
Okay.
You can report this. And you know, they will make a case of it.
Okay.
Absolutely. And we get a lot of calls. I get emails from, you know, many, you know, countries. I get emails from Cameroon and people, you know, medical doctors working on other countries saying, look, we have these tablets. We don't know what they are. Right. And, of course, my lab, we can accommodate only a small number of samples. But we are trying to set up a sort of like a system where we could analyze for free, you know, samples for people in developing countries that they can't afford this.
But I would think even the FDA and the CDC, there would be so many of these complaints that would they be swamped as well?
I think so. I mean, the FDA has a really strong effort trying to get a hold of counterfeit drugs, and they do a lot of good work, but, you know, this is a large problem.
Right.
So it's not only about one agency in one country. I think it's an organized approach to
it.
So, yeah.
Right. And say you find that it is a counterfeit drug and it's often in another country. I mean, it's got to be difficult prosecuting these people.
It's very difficult. You know, it's very difficult to track where these drugs are coming from. And I believe in the consumer, you know, power in these things. And there are many online email lists that people actually talk about fake drugs that they've been finding. Medical doctors say, well, look, you know, we are here in Tanzania, for example, and we found this. These are maybe fake, and we are going to send them for analysis. So, really, it's just networking at the low level, you know, the ground level. It's probably the best way to do.
So much the way you'd look for a stereo component, look at reviews on MySpace or some kind of review.
That's an interesting thought. Are there places where people said, yeah, this online pharmacy I got good.
I don't know if for online pharmacies, but I know that there are many lists for quality of medicine, and you can just subscribe to these lists, and they're online, and they will tell you, you know. But these are more oriented to researchers, I think.
Okay.
I don't know if there's anything at the level of consumers, but I'm sure these things will become more popular.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. So now we've come to the point in the program where we try to discuss what have we learned today. And I think we've learned, be very wary of online pharmacies. Is that a correct,
absolutely,
correct assumption? And with regard to online pharmacies, we've learned that Facundo's girlfriend is probably very suspicious of any pharmaceuticals coming to his house.
Right, in Ziploc bags.
Right, exactly. So do you regret using your credit card number now to order
those things? I get phone calls every 2 months from a customer service rep trying to refill my prescription, my sort of prescription for Viagra.
Right.
Yeah, and I keep saying to him, look, I'm done with this. I don't need it anymore, but it keeps happening. Yeah.
Wow. And then the other thing we've learned is it's a huge problem worldwide. I mean, you know, a large proportion of drugs on the Internet are probably fake, and even what you might get through, you know, normal channels. Right. And it's a problem in the United States as well, because we get a lot of our drugs.
And in some ways, it is more malicious than people that are selling heroin or cocaine. You know, you've made the decision to, you know, basically go down the drain on those. But this is, people are unsuspecting and are trying to use this for their health.
All right. Well, it's been very educational. Thank you very much, Dr. Fernandez.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So next week, I believe we'll be talking to Professor Mark Guzdal from the College of Computing at Georgia Tech about...
And shortly after that, we should have Nicole Lydon from CDC, behavioral scientist.
Absolutely. Hopefully, we'll be talking about how to teach computer science in a less boring way. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us here on Inside the Black Box. Stay tuned for a special holiday edition of Garden Party, followed at 11 to 12 for the Shopping Spree. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week on Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs.